Good afternoon and welcome to the Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy, a monthly program designed to bring you timely information on energy topics of interest to Cape Cod. I'm your host, Amy Vole, Marketing Communications Coordinator at Cape Light Compact, along with John Burns, an Energy Efficiency Program Planner at Cape Light Compact. Hi, John.
You say that so dramatically.
Don't I, though?
You do.
Thank you.
And I'm delighted to be here sitting in this seat today and having you in that seat.
Yes, John graciously let me fill in
I cajoled you into filling in, is what it was.
As the host today. Cape Light Compact is located in the Superior Courthouse at the County Complex in Barnstable. Going green has been touted as the answer to reviving our economy and saving the planet. But do most folks on Main Street have the knowledge to understand and tools to embrace the rapidly expanding green movement? How do we discern fact from fiction, identify products and ideas that really work, or make a positive contribution to improving environmental quality at home and in our communities? Today's guest helps run a nationally renowned institution that, among other outstanding program areas, is dedicated to advancing knowledge and sustainable practices related to environmental quality policy through a criteria built to measure success. We're pleased to welcome Jeff Treiber, Dean of Strategic Learning Partnership at the National Graduate School of Quality Management. Jeff's here to speak with us about the development of their new Collaborative Center for Environmental Quality Policy in Woods Hole and give us practical advice on navigating the exploding green landscape with purpose and confidence. Jeff, welcome to Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy. We're so glad to have you on the program.
Well, thank you, Amy and John. It's good to be here.
Great. You know, first, I think we must start out by asking you what exactly the National Graduate School for Quality Management is, and tell us a little bit about your mission to advance environmental policy and practices.
Almost 20 years ago now, Amy, Dr. Robert Gee, the president and founder, saw a need for systems education. He worked in a lot of institutions, academic and corporate, and said, boy, there's a lot we could do with these places, and there's a lot that the people really want to accomplish, but there doesn't seem to be a way to unlock their energy and focus the organization on being better. Everybody wants to do the right thing, but a lot of times organizations and people seem to get stuck. Mm-hmm. So he founded the school. Back then, the administrative offices are located in Falmouth. It's a academic approach to systems improvement. Our first degree ever way back then was quality systems management. And what it does is it allows people to understand the environment they're in, no pun intended, given the show's content today, understand what they want to accomplish, what the organization wants to accomplish, see the gaps, and do what they really naturally are motivated to do, which is make a difference. Mm-hmm. And teaching people to do that and allowing them to see how impactful they can be is really rewarding from a couple of aspects. The students, usually adult students for us, and the organizations get a great benefit out of it. Over the last 10 years or so of the history, we've seen more and more people saying, look, I want to improve the environmental impact that my organization makes for the people inside the organization and for those in the surrounding communities. And more of them chose projects. This school, unlike a lot of graduate schools, instead of doing a thesis, the students will take on a project. Every time they have a class that helps have them understand systems improvement, they'll have a project that they have to apply that learning to. By the time they're all done, we target the value of their improvement to be at least 10 times the cost of tuition, which gives them a great resume builder, a great reinforcement of the education, and kudos to the organization that sponsored them that they happen to be working for. More and more, we saw people that wanted to do things for the environment, and more, we saw that the curriculum was, although universal enough to guide them through the systems that they were up against, there was an opportunity to be even more impactful by creating a center for collaborative learning around environmental quality policy.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about the green campus that you're developing in Woods Hole? And, you know, what exactly are you going to be doing there to focus on getting the word out about, you know, the environmental quality management systems that you're going to be developing?
The neat thing about the new campus, it's 3 acres on Oyster Pond, just off of Ottawa Lane. We were lucky enough to acquire that from Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. You've been out there.
I have been, and I must say it's an absolutely beautiful spot.
Beautiful, beautiful campus.
Yes.
Three residences, two other structures on the property, beautiful setting. That is going to be the center for the collaborative learning in environmental policy. Now, there's not going to be a ton of students out there. There's not going to be dormitories or anything. That's not our educational model. We usually bring the education to the organization. When we teach the corporate world, we offer the classes on their site or at a local site. We work with the military. We can work on a military base. What that is going to be, though, is a place for limited numbers of people to get together to collaborate on how do we make this system work even better than it's working? How do we look at the technologies that will be employed on that site, LEED certification, other environmental and sustainable practices, and understand if they work here, how can they work elsewhere? One of the things we're excited about is our partnership with you and the Cape Light Compact and our ability to tell your story. What we found is that once people can see, once they understand the possibilities, they're excited about doing something. Nobody comes into work every day or walks out in their home or in their school and says, I really want to make a mess out of everything. I want to do something bad and wrong and all the stuff that I think that could be better, the heck with it. Okay? They really want to make a difference. They're just frustrated for some reason or can't see the way to do it. Well, a perfect opportunity for the public through the National Graduate School to take some of those examples, some of those case studies, some of the great leaders in the field, like Cape Light Compact, and examine their case. What does it take to make your process work effectively? How have you done the great things you've done so far? What are the factors? What are the opportunities for improving that process even? And how could we teach other people to follow that model?
Who's going to be your typical student?
Our typical student up to this point is an adult learner, usually employed by a large organization, okay? Doesn't mean that we don't take individuals. We just haven't found that the type of learner interested in our programs is the kid just out of high school, okay? Our typical student is been employed in an organization, military, commercial, nonprofit, has enough experience in an organization that they see things they'd like and make a difference in, and they really want to use this education as a platform to make a contribution to the organization they're committed to, and as a resume builder, because that project will give them practical experience, measurable results, and allow them to move forward in their career. For whatever the reason, we have not been a primary education provider. We usually have students that are adults, employed, or engaged in some other organization.
Can you tell me how those experiences that they take out of this once they go through your course, how is that going to benefit? I know it's going to benefit their individual organizations that they're working for, but how do you see it really benefiting the community at large once you have those case studies?
Great question. They benefit with the former program, their organization. They're improving the system they work in, right? And I suppose even in that curriculum, there's a tertiary benefit to people outside. Maybe the product comes out faster. Maybe the service has higher quality. Maybe they're able to take on more customers for the nonprofits. But boy, if we take that same platform and have the students and organizations focus on the environment, not only are they as organizations going to be enhanced, but everybody outside, of course, is impacted by the environment. So it's a win-win for the people, the organizations, and the community at large.
And are you going to be sharing that information through open sourcing?
Thanks for the question. Dr. Geese committed the organization to taking what we develop, taking what we learn, taking what we organize, and making it available to the community. So the policy is that if we develop case studies, they're open sourced. If we develop curriculum, they're open sourced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If people develop projects, you know, short of failing to protect the proprietary rights, it's going to be an open source communication. This is too important to kind of hold hostage for some profitability motive. It's too important to the world to have this thing hidden someplace.
Mm-hmm. And it certainly sets you apart from other organizations that are doing similar programs.
Well, thank you.
Can you talk about some of the components of the Green Campus and how you intend to use the Green Campus as a teaching tool?
Absolutely. Two of the platforms so far was, number one, 2 years ago, the National Graduate School, through Dr. Gee, was a signatory to the American Climate Commitment for Universities. And now we're a member of the Association for Sustainability in Higher Education. The signatory commitment that we made through Dr. Gee lays out a series of standards and accomplishments about the campus. For instance, it requires that we develop the new properties to a LEED Silver or better standard.
And that, just for those that are not familiar with what LEED is, Would you just quick explanation of that?
Quickly, LEED is a component of the Green Energy Building Council, what I call an NGO, a non-governmental organization, that sets standards for environmentally conscious construction and maintenance and operation of buildings. It's a great set of learning that describes not only the way buildings can be built environmentally, but how they can be powered environmentally, how the air, the land, the internal operations can be environmentally sensitive. And they have a national standards board now, and people can accomplish in existing structures or new structures levels of certification, LEED certification.
Okay, and you have these certifications on the buildings, on your buildings?
Yeah, we've committed through that President's Council to be at least LEED Silver.
All right.
So I was just going to say, I think the kind of the basis for the Green Campus moving forward, I know that you've already made several improvements. You're leading by example through your organization. Maybe you can talk through some of the improvements you've already made on your main campus in Falmouth and some that you will be implementing on the Green Campus through the help of Cape Light Compact.
Sure. Concurrent with that commitment, Dr. Gee began in our administrative offices in Falmouth to really take on how can we make this building more energy efficient, completely replace the heating and ventilation systems, put in high efficiency fluorescent lighting, looked at the envelope of the building, took the time to get the setback thermostats and set them properly and get the employees in the building educated about how to best work in this environment, all paralleling the LEED kind of approach to building systems. We found out that because of those efforts, and Dr. Gee did it because he's committed to the concept that building is going to be Energy Star certified by the end of the summer. And I've got to tell you, the interesting thing to me, the exciting thing to me is it's a great place to work. It wasn't really hard to do that. It improved the aesthetics, the lighting, and the creature comforts of the building, as well as being energy conscious. It's a great, relatively small, but great example of what can be done when you listen to the right people and do the things that might sound a little different, but ultimately have great impact on everybody.
I just want to take a quick break for a moment to reintroduce our guest. You're listening to Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy, and our guest today is Jeff Triber, Dean of Strategic Learning Partnership at the National Graduate School of Quality Management. And again, he's here speaking with us about their new green campus in Woods Hole. Kind of to pick up on that last idea that you were talking about, you said, you know, some of the ideas to the people who you worked with seemed different. How are you going to educate the people internally at your organization, and what examples can you give for people who are meeting resistance from their organizations about going green or taking the steps to go green?
Amy, I don't know what it takes to be motivated to make a difference. I mean, I think everybody inherently wants to do something that makes a difference for themselves and for other people. I also think that it's easy to see, well, it won't be supported, or that doesn't make sense, or why should I bother? And those are all legitimate ways of being. Nobody has to do some of the things we're talking about here. But there are a lot of people that, especially given the sensitivities that we've started to see with the data that's becoming so prolific about where we are and where we could be if we don't start thinking differently, that if they can just listen, ask questions, get an explanation in a manner that they can understand. One of the challenges in our business, I think, is, wow, it's all a bunch of climate this and carbon that. And
it's very complicated for people to understand.
But take the passion, and that's what our people are doing so far, and this is what we teach. take the lucky few people that you have that have a passion to make a difference and support them with coaching and information like we did at our school. We went and said, look, guys, some people like it cold, some people like it hot. Let's talk about it. Can we agree upon a temperature? Just the fact that we agreed upon a temperature rather than having the thing turned up and down all the time was a breakthrough.
That's okay. True.
And we found out that, by the way, if everybody's home after 6 o'clock, we can raise the temperature automatically, have it right at that great temperature back when you come into work, and not just cool the place for 24/7 unnecessarily. Hey, how about the plastic cups? Do we have to use plastic? We have a dishwasher. Why not put a glass in there? How about the products we use to clean the sinks? There's great opportunities these days. The kind of green rush has a lot of people confused. There's a lot of choices out there, but boy, there's a lot of opportunities too.
Are people going to be able to find out some of those systems through your open sourcing?
I'll tell you what we're going to do, Amy. We're going to take a look at the things that seem to make sense in a system sense, and we're going to hold up almost like Mythbusters, if you will. Mm-hmm. Look, this is what we see work. This is what we see tried but doesn't work. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong. When we put together a package for open sourcing, we're going to be fair and objective, and we're going to do it in a teaching sense. But I've got to tell you, that doesn't mean that anything else is wrong. I think the challenge with the environmental world, you know, I hope there's not a lot of shams out there. I hope there's not a lot of people that are just fooling with something as serious as this. What I like about the explosion of interest and the explosion of energy around green is there's more opportunities to make a difference. Ask the questions, look to people that are neutral for information, think about how the system is going to work, but then do something. I don't know that there's a right way to do it. I just know that we got to do it.
Right. Well, how do you counter? I think a lot of people really get turned off these days because they're always hearing the doomsday reports. Mm. And it's always bad news. Unless you do this, this is going to happen. Unless you do this, this is going to happen. And I think it really scares people. Do you have a different approach to educating the community, educating businesses about coming at this from a more positive angle?
I think we have to, Amy. I think anybody that wants to make a difference in anything they do, especially in the environment, has to have a slightly different approach. There will be people, as I said before, that really want to make a difference. And they're, you know, get out of the way. I'm going to save the world, or at least my little piece of it in any way I can. And that's great. I think there's also people that are concerned about change, afraid of change, not clear on how it's going to affect them. Letting them get the answer in a way that they can appreciate it, answering the questions that they ask, having them understand the system rather than the event or moment, is a real breakthrough in unlocking their enthusiasm as well. Mm-hmm. I don't think people naturally want to do a bad thing in a bad way or not do a great job. It's just that, wow, if I'm deluged with information I don't understand and I'm made bad and wrong by the stuff I do understand, you know, I might as well just lock my doors and hope it goes away.
Right. I hear you. Well,
and one of the things that we've preached on this program is that everybody can play to a certain extent.
Absolutely.
You don't have to solve every single one of the world's problems.
Right.
You can go out and replace an incandescent bulb with a compact fluorescent bulb, and you've taken the step. Mm-hmm. Then you can look for other things to do. But there's some very easy, short-term things that everyone can do that will improve things, and it will spawn other of that type of activity. And if enough of us do it, we're going to make a big, big difference.
I agree. You know, Jeff, what I'd really like to know, obviously you're very passionate about everything environmental that's going on right now. You have a real commitment to getting the word out about best quality practices. I want to know how you developed your interest in the whole movement.
I guess I was lucky, Amy. When I was a kid growing up, we had right behind our house a dairy farm and woods.
That's nice.
I don't want to date myself, but TV wasn't nearly as prolific. It was also black and white back then. But we were just outside, and you know, thankfully, our parents said, go play. Go out and play, right? And it was a great neighborhood and a great place to explore. The most fun I ever had was just kind of walking around, looking at the dairy cows, checking out the birds in the woods and the frogs in the ponds and the water rippling and everything else. And, you know, my brothers and I were running around like a bunch of maniacs sometimes, but what a great experience, right? And somehow that unlocked in me, I won't say an understanding, but at least an appreciation of what open space was and what nature could be, how much fun it could be. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you sit anywhere, especially with some open space, and just listen and just look, to me, at least, that's far more entertaining than any TV show I've ever seen. Okay, and then I was lucky enough to have my my parents take me to the Cape for the summers. And
you were a lucky young man.
I guess I was. And I appreciate everybody that that gave me what I'm talking about. But we would go out in this silly inflatable rubber raft in a marsh, and you know, try to catch blue crabs, and they'd be up in the rubber raft, and we'd be screaming, trying to jump out, and you know, I'd go snorkeling in some of the water bays, and we used to drive out on Nauset Beach when you could in a four-wheel drive, and no TV, mm-hmm. just sat there. You know, if you wanted to get entertained, go swimming, right? But wow, what a how exciting the simplicity was, and how special it is right now. How do we get people to see that and to see that they can make a difference there? And John said it best. It doesn't, you know, I'm not going to throw my cup on the ground. I'm going to put it in the trash. If I see a piece of trash, I'm going to pick it up. And there's nothing wrong. Go ahead and walk by. I don't mind. Mm-hmm. But wow, you can make a difference. You know, yeah. The simple light bulb, the simple shutting the faucet off.
Right. Well, and we've also talked about this before on this program, Cape Cod and the islands, this is what we depend on, and this is why we're all here. It's the environment. And you hear over and over again about some of the stuff that you've described disappearing. You know, there aren't a lot of crabs anymore. There aren't a lot of fish anymore to go fishing. And I certainly hope with the program that you're going to be presenting on the Green Campus and the opportunities available, that people in the community are really going to take advantage of, because I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of programs that are very specifically based here on Cape Cod that you're going to be highlighting, especially the work that we're doing through Cape Light Compact. Now, I know, for instance, we just came to visit the Green Campus in Woods Hole not so long ago to do an assessment on the projects that you're going to be working on there. I mean, right now, the places there aren't terribly energy efficient, but I know we're going to be working to improve that. And maybe you can talk a little bit about your plans for the actual buildings on the Green Campus and what different systems that you see that you're going to be installing that are really going to be examples to the community of what they can do.
Interesting to see how things change, Amy, too. Beautiful piece of property on Oyster Pond on a beautiful peninsula there off of Onawa Lane. First house built maybe sometime in the 40s, then in the 50s. I'm not sure that there's a modern piece of heating, ventilation, or lighting equipment there, but you know, for its time, it was fine. To take that and to make all of those buildings LEED Silver is quite a commitment, but the interesting thing is, just like our Falmouth campus, the internal environment for the people that are going to be there is so much better as a result. I mean, one of the things that we see as the process goes along, so you've done your initial energy audit, you're going to give us some recommendations.
These are pre-existing buildings. I mean, they are old, beautiful, beautiful classic Cape buildings that we're going to be able to preserve.
Preserve them both from a historic standpoint and from an energy efficiency standpoint.
Exactly.
That's a kind of a critical thing to talk about, too, is that in order to become energy efficient, you don't have to change the character of the building.
Right.
And, Jeff, what's the time frame on getting the buildings up to the standards you're looking for?
Because nothing was done to this property in many, many years. And because it sat idle for 6 years, it's got some significant challenges. The roofs are leaking. The ceilings are impacted. The vegetation is overgrown. Beautiful piece of property. You have to use your imagination a little bit.
Sure.
So there's plenty for us to do, but it's a great clean slate. Amy described it when we were out there as a clean slate to look at energy efficiency and systems thinking. And that in itself is a case study. Why does Cape Light Compact do what it does? How can they apply their technology simply in residences like we have here? What's the decision process that the school will make as it looks at that? What's the impact on our economics, the community, the difference we can make in the environment, all through the process that Cape Light Compact has started with us?
And I think it might be interesting just to mention for those that may have been tuning into this program for the very, very first time, the Cape Light Compact basically has energy efficiency incentives, financial incentives that we provide to businesses, residents, governments to enhance the efficiency of their building, bring it up to the current standards.
Well, and John, there's another great case study. Okay, so Cape Light Compact, nonprofit, in financial incentives to do things that are better for the environment, will save people money and enhance their living ability in their organizations.
Improve their environment.
How could you not do that? That's an interesting case study for me. How come people aren't lined up at your door, knocking the door down, saying, I'm next, I want this,
they
come
are.
In here. All right, good. Let's get a few thousand more.
Well, we certainly will. We love to have tremendous examples like yours. You're taking facilities that have, you know, been unoccupied for a long time and bringing them up to current standards. Actually, we have a similar project going on right here in Provincetown, the Provincetown Town Hall. Cape Light Compact is very involved in implementing energy efficiency, and it is critical to the folks in Provincetown and actually all of us that live on the Outer Cape that love that building to see to it that all of its historic attributes are kept while making it efficient at the same time.
And, you know, Cape Light Compact moving forward is really looking forward to working with the National Graduate School on the Green Campus and potentially holding some future meetings there, possibly open to the public, where we can talk more about everything that we meant to do, that we talked about on the program today. So we're actually very excited about our alliance and our partnership moving forward. Well, guess what?
What did I tell you?
You did. You told me that, first of all, thank you so much for letting me host today, John. It was truly a pleasure. And Jeff, you were an amazing guest. You told us so much about everything that's going on and what you're doing to promote environmental quality here on Cape Cod and promoting that innovation. So now that we're at the end of the line, I will close our program. You've been listening to Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy. Timely topics on energy matters of interest to the Cape Cod community. If you have questions or topics you'd like us to address on future programs, you can email us at focus@capelightcompact.org or call 1-800-797-6699. And you can sign up for an energy audit or ask us any energy efficiency questions you may have. You can also go to our website and sign up for our newsletter. We just put out our second issue, and we want everybody to sign up and get their energy efficiency news from Cape Light Compact. I'd like to thank our guest, Jeff Triber, Dean of Strategic Learning Partnership at the National Graduate School of Quality Management, and my wonderful co-host, John Burns.
Oh, you're too kind.
Oh, thank you. He's our energy efficiency program planner at Cape Light Compact. I'd also like to thank our engineer, John Braden, for all he has done for us today and guiding me through this complicated first hosting time that I've had here. Thank you very much, John. Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy is broadcast from the historic schoolhouse in Provincetown on 92.1 on your FM dial and streamed on the World Wide Web at www.womr.org. I'm your host, Amy Vohl, and I want to thank you very much for listening, and as always, wish you a wonderful, energy-efficient afternoon.